Hello?
Hello?
Hello? This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright. And on the episode today, we have Pete Leung, the unofficial yet official international correspondent and investorpreneur on the program to discuss worldly issues out there and maybe everything investing, not just real estate, but everything else, including real estate, of what's going on out there. Pete's joined us before in the past, always brings tremendous insight to the investing world as a whole. Shares his thoughts on where things currently sit. Obviously, world economics also touches base on BC commercial real estate and some other investing opportunities that he's considering right now, considering how this current state of the world. So without further ado, let's get to our interview today with Pete Leung, investorpreneur. Enjoy, everyone.
This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Zentera has done it again. Recently named Multifamily Home Builder of the Year by the Home Builders Association of Vancouver and the Canadian Home Builders Association of BC. Zentera continues to move forward on new projects. And their latest, Butte, a new condo community in West Clayton, is now selling. With construction already underway, buyers can purchase with confidence, knowing that the project is moving forward.
Butte offers one, two, and three-bedroom condos located just 3 blocks to the future SkyTrain, Adam. These condos come with tons of inclusions like gas ranges, air conditioning, and designer-selected finishes. Residents will have access to the rooftop patio, fitness center, on-site daycare, co-working space, games room, and tons of outdoor space with 3 playgrounds. Estimated completion is summer 2028.
The best deals are happening now. Visit Zentera's home store in South Surrey to get all the details or check out the floor plans at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
All right, we're here today with Peter Leung, international investorpreneur. Peter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Corey. How are you doing?
Good, man. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to join us again. You've been on the program a few times, and we're very thankful to have you with a kind of an international look at the markets and what maybe outside of BC and potentially Canada that could affect our industry. But before we get into that, can you tell our listeners maybe a little bit more about yourself and your time in commercial real estate and investing?
Sure, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure always speaking with your crowd. And the reality is, you know, it's commercial real estate has changed my life. And so I'm very fortunate to be able to share my insight or my feedback as to what's happening. And since 2010, I've lived in, you know, more or less in Hong Kong because of my family. And seeing what the macro outlook of the world as an investor with regards to private equity, with regards to commercial real estate, you know, public and private equity, exempt market stuff. And it's been a blessing for me to be able to give back to this community. So thank you again for having me, Corey.
Absolutely, Pete. Well, you're the unofficial yet official international correspondent for the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. And obviously right now there's lots going on in the world. We had a war that's broken out in Iran. We've had, you know, challenges over the past couple of years with wars overseas there between Russia and Ukraine. We've got interest rates that have finally come off. We have a slower than probably expected real estate market here in BC. What is your overall thoughts on sort of everything you're seeing? I'm going to give you a long runway to kind of take this conversation wherever you want to go.
Sure. So, you know, let's start with this. I mean, you know, the reality with war, you know, there's a lot of things that are implications of that. You see, you know, gold prices haven't gone up and haven't come down. Same thing with commodities like silver, precious metals. I think those are things that are at play. And I think there's a lot of talk about, you know, the greenback being de-dollarizing. And I think that's one of the things that have been a macro theme in the last 36 months, actually. And so you start to see elements of less concentration in greenback and in the US dollar, especially with that of, you know, many countries actually starting to sell off a lot of the treasuries of the US. And so because of that, that's also been a really big reason why the gold has had such a run. And of course, with Iran and this war happening right now, the gold has come off because the greenback has actually picked back up for the temporary time being. And so much of this is sort of in the macro view of things right now. So it's affecting a lot in terms of real estate, you know, desires. It's affecting people's investment horizon, or even vice versa, what they're interested in investing, because it's stolen so much of the limelight. You also have, of course, you know, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in many places of the world starting to be adopted, and or having the situation where they're now starting to see some element of government support. And so it's taken a lot of attention away from Bitcoin itself when people are able to trade with derivatives or ETFs or anything of that nature. So the initial desire for crypto has changed a little bit in the community as well. And last but not least, then we'd start to talk about the last 24 months being really big into RWA, real world assets, where tokenization, quote unquote, tokenization of hard assets are now starting to become a thing. So, you know, that involves a lot into commercial real estate and starts to involve in residential real estate around the world as well. So that's really been, a lot of things are really happening at such a rapid pace. And of course, last but not least, you know, can't not talk about AI and how that's playing out in terms of how businesses are being affected, the software industry, the private equity, and as well as the public equity is shaping. And at last but not least is then the element of private credit. And that's the latest thing that's really been a big deal in the marketplace in the last 6 months, where a lot of big companies like Blackstone, BlackRock are now having to curb a little bit of their ability to pay out private credit or redemptions in private credit. So these are all things that are affecting large or to some degree the investment appetite. With the S&P and all the public equities running so strongly last year, and a lot of people are going back into looking at real estate, actually, because there's so much element of volatility in many of these things, including that of crypto, including that of public and private equity. And so a lot of people are, you know, serial investors are looking now for opportunity, specifically around the world for real estate, the right type of real estate and the right type of strategy. So to sum it all up, it's, you know, this is where, you know, as we call it, you know, when the tide goes out, you know, who's swimming naked. This is when you're starting to see a lot of this volatility shake a lot of investors and really identify what type of investment they're really doing.
I'd be really interested to get your thoughts. You talked about there about the private side and like companies like Blackstone maybe not being in the position to do redemption. I'd be really interested to get your thoughts around that, because obviously that type of credit market will impact lending and credit everywhere if that's a challenge, because that will obviously trickle down to real estate in general. I'd really like to hear your thoughts around that and something like a company like Blackstone, as big as they are, not being able to do redemption to the private side.
Yeah. So, you know, to be very specific, it's actually, you know, these large private organizations, they're not able to redeem their private credit to its full capacity. So a lot of times in the memorandum or subscription agreement, you're given a 5% redemption a year. You're not given a huge amount of redemption space. So they're starting to see more and more demand for redemption, because private credit, obviously, if it's lending to real estate, if it's lending to roll-ups, if it's getting rolling, or if it's actually designed to, you know, buy specific assets or infrastructure like the data centers or perhaps airports, those things are a long runway, right? No pun intended. And because of that, the ability for them to repay redemption is actually quite limiting because there's no new additional capital refinancing that's available at this moment. So it is designed as a 5-10 year type horizon, essentially, in private credit. But because of what's happened with so much volatility, and people are redeeming. And so, news is a lot to shape with this, right? Because of AI, because of what's happening in the marketplace, a lot of people are actually having, hearing a series of news about, private credit. When one goes down, it starts to ripple, the ripple effect. And that's exactly what's happening right now. So, even though that, Blackstone and BlackRock, they may have really fundamentally strong bases in terms of what they're investing in, but the whole industry of the private credit is starting to be shaken because of the news, because of some bad actors or people who have been really aggressive when interest rates were cheap and they borrowed a lot to be able to invest. And then, it didn't really quite work out as well, or they're invested in sectors like software, right? So private credit and software, that must be something that's very tough right now. So there's certain capital raisers in the industry that haven't really, done the whole industry justice. And because of that, it's pulling the entire market. It's almost like a run on the banks, right? So when you think that there is very little liquidity in a bank and a bank is going to go under, what do? You take out as much cash as you can. And because of that, it actually gives a run on the banks for that reason, because of what is being talked about and how much it's news driven. And that's exactly what's happening in the marketplace today. So, choosing great operators are very, very important in this marketplace. Specialization in these private credit, capital raising companies are very important. Even as big as Blackstone and BlackRock, they have dedicated teams, but there's a lot of the smaller organizations that haven't done quite as well and are having that liquidity run. And because of that, they're curbing redemptions. They're not able to redeem nearly as much as they can, and they don't have line of credits that deep enough pockets as well to be able to redeem the customer or the investor. And because of that, it's causing a lot of these players to quite honestly have their last run at capital raising. They may never raise again because of their reputation being tarnished. So, there's lots happening in that space, and it's currently, continuously evolving. A lot of them have a commercial real estate as a pillar, alongside infrastructure, as well as consumer discretionaries or consumer debt. So consumer debt being, the credit cards, the people who are under 30 that are, whether it's the type of like Best Buy credit cards or whatnot, that type of discretionary, consumer discretionary debt is facing some default. And because of that, it's seeing ripple effects along the whole industry. So, there's going to be certain players that are very seasoned, that are very good at what they do, have a really good team in place, have really good system, and have not over-leveraged. Those will be the players that actually come out on top, because they're able to essentially acquire some of these players that have not done nearly as well. And that's universally what happens as a cycle, whether it's real estate, private credit, in private equities, as well as residential real estate. So when things get tough, that's where the true players stand up.
What is your thought on, maybe we'll get a little bit more granular to some degree, obviously you've got real estate holdings around the world. Is there any area, maybe not specific to like a marketplace, but a country or something like that, that you think is maybe like a little more vulnerable to everything that's going on right now internationally, maybe more so than Canada?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely places to stay away from, there's only certain markets I look at. I mean, Canada, US, UK, Singapore, Hong Kong, Australia are places that I definitely look at and constantly have my ears to the ground. Canada actually does come up as one of the places that people really want to invest, or at least are looking, especially for the ultra high net worth, the family offices, commercial real estate that doesn't need to be a Canadian to be able to buy these assets, like residential in certain markets. I think those are becoming very sought after, because obviously, as some of you would have realized, Mark Carney, in terms of having been at Davos, given his legendary speech, has really brought a lot of people to go, hey, what is Canada doing? And that brought up, sometimes that has now picked up in terms of, well, they're not really involved in the war. They're staying a little bit further away from the US. So there's a little bit less volatility. And the markets are not, you know, overall are not as strong as inflated as they were. So opportunities are there. So I definitely sense that in the recent times, in the last 3 months, there is interest of heavy investors looking for opportunity. They're looking for operators. They're looking for people on the ground. They're looking for how they can get connectivity to the right type of deals. And it's only the right type of deals that they're invested in. So regardless of which market, whether it's the, you know, UK, whether it's Australia, which has, you know, faced a bit of dip in the residential side, multifamily side as well, you know, people are circling and they're looking for the right opportunities to hit. So, but they've waited this long on the sideline, they're going to be patient. This is patient capital. And the people sitting on capital that is free cash flow that's sitting in the bank, those are the people who are really being interested in deploying. You know, and most of us are more commonly knowing the guys like Warren Buffett in terms of having this amount of huge pot of capital available to deploy when times get tough. And despite, you know, whether it's private or public equity for that matter, prices have been high. And so people are circling. They're looking for the right opportunities to deploy this capital, at least, you know, at least their first tranche or two.
Now, how do you think Canada as a whole stacks up? You talked about Carney in Davos there. How does Canada appear from an international stage, do you think, with regards to attracting foreign investment? And when I say foreign investment, I'm not talking necessarily about foreign investors in quotations that they almost like paint a really bad brush with from an investor standpoint. But how does Canada stack up with regards to like other countries and companies and investors looking at our country right now?
That's a great question. Having spoken to a lot of fellow investors here in Hong Kong, as well as Singapore, there's certainly a good amount of attention in Canada. Obviously, a lot of people, when they talk about real estate, you know, the first thing that comes up to many is the residential side. And of course, being Vancouver or Toronto being, you know, core markets, that takes a lot of the first look at residential real estate. However, it's not so much that's capturing attention. It is the safety of capital. It is the Canadian dollar. It is the element of how close it is to war, you know, how much the volatility is, you know, is there much upside? And I think people are now looking for a safe harbor to park their capital. And because of that, commercial real estate is one of those natural assets. So they're, you know, what are they looking for? Warehousing. They're looking for things that are simple. They're looking for projects or, you know, a real estate that is with good anchor tenants. They're looking for things that are, you know, a reasonable coupon clipper. They're looking for something that they can hold for long periods of time. So I think those are, you know, common themes, regardless of where in Canada or where in the US or vice versa, you know, in the UK, Australia, Singapore, Hong Kong. That is what it's really in flavor, because everybody is now looking for, okay, you know, those who are in Hong Kong are now looking at going, okay, where else can I buy, right? Where else can I deploy my capital? And previously it was Vietnam. It was, at one point it was Thailand. So these markets have sort of gone, okay, well, been there, done that. And now it's, you know, more stable. And they're now actually more on the retreating side. But now they're looking at going, okay, well, if there's so much volatility, where can I be that I know things will be okay? Prices will, you know, trajectory is up, and people's interest in deploying for safe assets are that of Canada. Even, you know, multifamily has come up a lot in terms of amongst fellow investors. They're talking about multifamily. They're talking about HMOs in the UK, or perhaps a certain type of hotels in the UK. So I think they're looking for opportunity, and that, like I say, they're circling. And Canada is definitely in the conversation. People in Singapore, people in Hong Kong are not that familiar with that of the Canadian investment landscape. And because they don't have actually a huge amount of commercial allocation to these places like Canada, they're now being more interested because they have already bought in some of these other places that they have exposure. And now they're continuing to circle where Canada does come up as probably one of the top three places.
Pete, obviously, you're a very large investor in BC real estate, commercial, you know, especially various markets that we've talked before and we've had you on as a guest. What are your thoughts on the BC real estate market from what you've seen, maybe where it's at right now and maybe where it might take us in 2026?
So I would say that, you know, I'm still continuously positive in the markets in Western Canada, including that of, you know, places we've talked about like Kelowna and Nanaimo, you know, Kamloops for that matter. I'm still very positive on that because I think that the continuous demand is still there. And the focus of international investors or even local investors for that matter are looking at these markets. So continuously, I'm very positive on that overall as an investor. And, you know, but I think the one thing I want to really mark on that is that regardless of whichever market, it's extremely important to have a very clear strategy. It's really important to not just go, well, I just want to go buy a property because I'm buying a property. And that's hugely important. And the banking relationships are different today than they were before, where relationships could be the way to get financing before. Today, it's much less of relationship, but really banking guidelines and, you know, what they're interested in. So the volatility in being a lender or, you know, being a borrower from these lenders are changing dramatically as well. Being, you know, as I mentioned, banks being our largest partner, essentially. And they're more involved than they were before. They're more cautious than they were before. They're building in all the other guidelines as to vacancy, even though you may have only one tenant, but they're still building in vacancy. They're looking at more interest reserve. They're looking at a bigger buffer. They're looking at serial real estate investor versus a first time or a second time real estate investor. They're looking at the capital today is much more scarce and much more choosy and picky than they were ever before. So from that standpoint, I'd say what's most important is to, again, whether it's private credit or real estate, for that matter, is to pick operators if you are investing or if you were to be the primary principal in many of these operations, that you really have to know what you're doing and be, you know, much more picky about what you get into and having a strategy going in, having plan B, having a plan C, for that matter, how you would be able to continue to hold the property. And I think that's hugely important because most people don't have a second strategy or they don't know how to handle it if things don't go well or, you know, if a tenant moves on or, you know, or they choose somewhere else over your property and how you maintain it, manage it. I think all these factors become more and more important as an investor, because nobody cares about your money more than yourself. And I think that in this economy with this volatility, being an investor, you can be choosy and you need to be able to choose whether it's a general partner that can operate or a property management company that can do phenomenally well for your asset, and having those banking relationships tight and constantly maintained in order for you to be a real estate investor today. So I think those are things that are really, really important on top of my list. And whether I'm, you know, having bought so many properties and having been a long-time investor in the BC marketplace, I am looking for very, very specific deals, very specific operations and or even strategies. That's the only time that I'm going to be deploying any capital, because I can choose to be choosy at this point.
One thing we preach on this program all the time is in order to succeed in commercial real estate, professional relationships will be very important, whether that's important with a brokerage to get access to the properties you're looking for, whether that's lending, but you touch base there on property management. And that is one thing that's extremely important, especially if you're an absentee owner and you're not hands-on or living locally. Having a strong property management company is so important in today's world because operating costs are getting more and more expensive. Tenants write you a check. They don't care where that check goes. And as those operating costs to operate the building continue to climb, those costs most likely get passed down to the tenants if you have true triple net leases in place. And making sure that you have a good property management company that's on top of the operations and on top of the numbers is more important, in my opinion, now than ever. You also touch base on the banking relationships. And as we tell a lot of people, you can take a great property and put a bad lending deal on it and turn it from a great property into a bad property. You can also take a good property and put great lending on it and turn it into a great property. That's how important that lending is. Right now, obviously, with the volatility in the marketplace, with everything that's going on, that banking relationship or the mortgage broker relationship is so important. And I'm glad you touched base on that there. Pete, one other question I have here, maybe as a final question here before we jump into our six-pack. reach into your crystal ball and just remember anything you do say on here, we do hold you accountable for. What are your predictions for the rest of this year? Maybe it's a marketplace, maybe it's an asset class. What are your predictions for the rest of 2026 when it comes to commercial real estate?
Oh, I was going to say volatility. Volatility is definitely very high in 2026, and I think it will continue to be. But I think furthermore than that, if it's specific to commercial real estate, I think the opportunities will exist. And so, if I was to reach into my crystal ball and go, what would I think about commercial real estate today? I think the opportunity is what I smell today. And I think it's a little bit still too early to look at, depressed commercial real estate. Certainly in Hong Kong, that's been the case, for very depressed commercial real estate prices and rental as well, for that matter. When, I remember being first on the show 2 years ago, there was, Hong Kong real estate wasn't where it was. The commercial side wasn't where it was. We've got a lot of vacancy. So things can really change quite rapidly on a macro scale. And because of that, I would say, my theme of the year is volatility. So understand that volatility, embracing that volatility, having that cash pile is definitely the theme of 2026. And if I was to say commercial real estate, have that team in place, have that lending relationship in place, having the brokerage in place, identifying what strategy that you want really, really right in advance, and identifying what criteria is really going to matter. And with all the very form of your partnerships, whether it's the banking, the brokers, as well as the property manager, is going to be hugely important if you were to pick up anything. So there are going to be opportunity. And for those who are able to move fast, have a reputation in the marketplace, especially in the market that you're dealing with, is going to be the foot that you have ahead of everybody else. So I think that is my prediction for 2026. Despite the volatility, there will be opportunities. Be patient. Find the deal that really makes sense and making sure that you have the operator that can deliver results time and time again. Track record is what's most important right now.
Well, let's leave it there for the show. Pete, you know how this works. We go through and we ask you 6 lighthearted questions before we let you go. So we get to know you a little bit more outside of that office. Do you have a few minutes to hang out with us?
Absolutely, Corey.
All right, first question up. Where is Pete vacationing in 2026, assuming you can find the time?
You know what? I've made an effort that I go on 3 vacations with the kids every year. No nanny, just me, the wife, and the kids. So we are actually planning our next vacation. As a matter of fact, I just booked the tickets like half an hour ago. And we're going to Hangzhou, China. So China is a place that we're fascinated with, and there's so much to see. The opportunities are there in terms of so much to do for the kids. And I encourage anybody who's actually looking at a vacation spot to visit China. So I'm obviously a flight away, about 2.5 hours away, and I'm really excited doing that over the Easter holiday.
Amazing. I know you're a watch guy. What's on the hit list for 2026 when it comes to watches? And we'll give you the runway. You can do 1, you can do 2, you can do 3. What is on your hit list for watches in 2026?
Right. So I would definitely, being an investor at heart, even though I am a watch enthusiast, one of those 3 watches I think will have to be a Rolex. And, traditionally it's never been that way. I've never really been into Rolexes, but the way it holds value, the increments that they continue to make, the type of changes that they're bringing to their watches. So I would say a Rolex, what would it be? It'd be a Rolex baby blue dial platinum day date would I do. I think that's one of the watches I would definitely pick up. 2nd is a JLC Reverso. I think that's going to be hugely important. And I just picked up a Vacheron Constantin 222, which is their 270th anniversary, which was 2025. So those are 3 watches that are very much on my hit list in the last few months, and definitely eyeing those opportunities as well in the watch market.
Amazing. Amazing. Do you have a book recommendation for our listeners? Doesn't have to be real estate related, but it can be.
Do I have a book? That's a great question. I don't. You know what, Corey? I don't have a book for you. But what I will say is that I've been really studying a lot more into the technicalities of market cycles. So, you know, I've been reviewing a lot more YouTube elements on, you know, AI and whether officially and unofficially what's happening in the AI world, including, you know, how it went from, you know, the ChatGPT and the DeepSeek, to now having things that are semi-automated like OpenClaw to now being, you know, or AI agents. So, you know, how to essentially understand AI and how that is shaping the current marketplace as well as the future marketplace for everything, including that of commercial real estate and public and private equity. So adopting, understanding, learning AI to implementing AI as part of my daily routine and my evaluation process, my due diligence process, to how I can use AI to execute. And whether it's going to be, you know, the accounting side of things, whether it's going to be the research type of things, or whether it's going to be where the market's moving, what type of watch trends there are, what type of real estate trends are there are. So I would say, you know, that's not really in a book at the moment, because I think that's still shaping and that's changing every day.
Interesting. Interesting take on that. So Pete, you find yourself in a karaoke bar. You might have had a couple of drinks at this point. Someone throws a karaoke mic in your face. What song are you singing?
Oh, man, I'm definitely not a singer. But when I do get a chance, I am still very much a Blackpink fan. And the girl group from the K-pop group in Korea, as they were just recently in Hong Kong and Singapore. So I was blessed to be able to attend both concerts. And I would definitely, it would be definitely a Blackpink song. And I think if I was, you know, I think Jennie is one of the ones that are really top of my list right now. I know I don't definitely sing that high, but that would be a song that I definitely party it up with.
Unfortunately, you found yourself on death row. You get one more meal before it's all said and done. What meal are you having?
You know what? Here's what I would do. I mean, previously I said steak. I still would stick with that. But you know what? I've got a really, really great restaurant. It's called the Regent Steakhouse here in Hong Kong, and it has the best Hangwoo beef from Korea and is absolutely out of this world. So that would be my choice with a salad, you know, with an open salad bar and creme brulee. So that's what I would have. And I'm pretty stable. I'm pretty happy with my steak.
All right, Pete. Money's no object. What would be the dream car?
You know what? I'm definitely not as much a car guy as most, but I would right now, I think I would go with a Rolls Royce. That's what I would do. I think you know, that's really picked up. But I think as a second choice, despite the Rolls Royce Phantom or the Ghost, I think I would be really interested in the new nine that is from BYD, which is the supercar that they've put together, where it's really caught my attention. And it's not available in Hong Kong, but it's definitely one of those dream cars. It's either the Rolls-Royce or the U9 with BYD.
Awesome, Pete. And I guess the last and final question, where is Pete Leung investing in 2026? Doesn't have to be real estate, doesn't have to be local real estate. Where would Pete invest in 2026? Anywhere in the marketplace, any market, any industry, anywhere in the world?
I think the three things I would invest in is Bitcoin at under 50,000. Second is, so it's still a bit ways to go from there. Second, I would invest in gold. I would continue to invest in gold at this point in time. And I would be investing in public equities when it takes a tumble. I don't think this is it. I think there's going to be another tumble in the public equity. So I am definitely interested in the U.S., the SPY, or, you know, the S&P 500, and some of the top companies that have been depressed, including that of CrowdStrike, NVIDIA, Microsoft, for that matter. I think those are the three, you know, top picks I have. And last but not least, I would continue to eye the opportunity in commercial real estate.
All great answers, Pete. Once again, we appreciate you taking the time to join us. Where can our listeners find out more about yourself, contact you, find out more about what you're doing?
Yeah, so I'm always on LinkedIn. And if you, you know, look me up, I am peterleung.com. You can always find me. And, you know, I'd love to have conversations. I have conversations with investors all the time from all around the world. I'd love the insight to provide as well as to give. So for that matter, I look forward to reaching out and hearing from some of your listeners.
Amazing, Pete. Thank you once again for joining us. We greatly appreciate your time as always. And as our official or unofficial, yet official, international correspondent for the Commercial Real Estate Podcast. Thanks, Pete. We appreciate it.
Awesome.
There you have it, folks. Our interview today with Pete Leung, investorpreneur, and always gracious with his time. So good at taking the time to join us. He's calling us from overseas, so it's probably either late into their day or early morning, one of the two, depending where he's calling us from. But we're always pleased to have Pete on the show program. Always shares a really, really good level of insight on various things. And, you know, hearing things where we talked about Bitcoin and also the opportunities in commercial real estate and the patient opportunities in commercial real estate right now, that's what hit him at the top of his list. I can say from a brokerage standpoint, we are having tremendous amount of transactions. And as I said at the start of this year, I don't necessarily know those if those transactions will equate to prices increasing nor decreasing for that matter, but transaction volume is way, way up. And I think there's a level of inventory that's sort of being shopped around quietly that's allowing for those transaction volumes to grow at the rate that they are with it. To as of first week of March, we have not probably seen prices really creep up in any capacity. I think vendors' expectations are maybe a little more realistic right now as we head into 2026. But with all that said, Pete provided some great insight as always. I definitely encourage listeners to reach out to him. He's really gracious for this time. He definitely takes time to get back to most people there. So reach out to him through LinkedIn, say hi, and he'll get back to you as soon as he can. And we'll be back next week, guys, with another great episode. Thanks for joining. Take care.
Subscribe today.